I've seen how parents teach their children sign language when they are really small babies. Is it a thing?
Yes. So one of the principles that a lot of speech therapists follow is an approach called total communication. So the idea is that any means we can employ to aid communication, to decrease frustration, and to boost connection can only be good.
This is a Baby Brunch podcast.
Today on Parents and Baby Brunch, we're bringing in a speech therapist. Our speech therapist, Stephanie Thompson, she's been in the game for the past 15 years. And when I got your letters about conversations, thumb sucking, dummies, how to eat, breathe, speak, and also how we develop all of this to be able to hear, I realized that a diagnosis and sometimes the signs of something not working is really hard to see. It's not that obvious. So a big, big welcome to Stephanie Thompson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about your practice just quickly. So you're in Bhagari.
Yes. So I'm part of a multidisciplinary practice. We've got a team of OTs and speech therapists and physios and play therapists and some doctors. And we really try to hold families that are walking a pathway of developmental difficulty in a holistic way.
I feel so blessed because we've had a day of change. We've helped so many people with conversation and we brought in all of our experts. What's the best part of your job?
Oh, I get to play with kids all day.
That's fun. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
While we're saying thank you, a big, big thank you to our support here on Parent and Baby Brunch.
This podcast is supported by Epimax, the dermatologist recommended skincare range specifically formulated to hydrate, soothe, and protect. Whether it's dry skin, sensitive skin, or just everyday moisture, Epimax has a solution for everybody. Fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, and suitable for all ages. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.
Stephanie, as someone who's been active in the field for such a long time, when I get a letter from a parent that says my child doesn't talk, it's really hard.
Yes.
So, Ilana, my child doesn't talk. What are some of the common visits that you get at the practice?
The most common kind of client that I used to see was children with articulation difficulties, so difficulty saying their sounds. The practice that I work at is also we work with a lot of complicated kids, so I see a lot of kids with really complicated communication needs. And the truth of it is that a child not talking is really the tip of the iceberg. So there are lots of different avenues for us to investigate along that way. So it doesn't really come down to being able to answer that question, why doesn't my child talk? But what it comes down to is, if your child is not talking, there are lots of avenues we have available to support them.
That's amazing. So if we had to look at speech therapy, does it come with other kind of medical or holistic support, or does it stand on its own?
So no health service should ever stand on its own. We need help from other professionals almost always. If I'm working with a child who's had a lot of ear infections and they're battling to produce their sounds because they can't hear them well, sometimes that can also affect the balance system. Right. Then we need an OT to help us. So I think for my mind, any professional who's telling you they can do everything is maybe not going to be in your best interest.
So if we had to think of the role of a speech therapist, when do we come and see you?
So the research shows us with young children under three that the strongest indicator of need for speech therapy is mom's instinct. So, you know, there are lots of different checklists and developmental pathways that you can, you know, follow your child along. But actually, if mom feels that something is not right, or maybe primary caregiver is more appropriate in our setting, that is often the strongest indicator. And I think in parenting, you know, we're so lucky that there's so much information available to us and there are apps and books and websites and chat groups, but I think that glut of information has actually caused us to lose track of parent instinct.
Wow.
So like with my kids, my first is 8, and when I had her, I read all the things. And it actually made me panic because I thought this child is not doing all, you know.
Yeah.
And my husband actually, he at one stage took a book, one of the parenting books that I was following, and he added up the number of hours in a child's daily routine in the book. He said to me, love, there's 26 hours in this child's daily routine. And when I had my second, I was really just much more able to follow my instinct, listen to myself, and I think it's made me a better parent to her. So the information is wonderful and useful, but actually the most important thing is instinct.
I am so encouraged by the fact that our expert is saying, follow your gut. And you know what? Sometimes our gut is also absent because we are suffering from things or our lives are too busy. Mm. But when we do have the ability to say, I think something is wrong, that is when we come and see our speech therapist. Listen, while I have your attention, I've seen how parents teach their children sign language when they are really small babies. Is it a thing?
Yes. So one of the principles that a lot of speech therapists follow is an approach called total communication. So the idea is that any means we can employ to aid communication, to decrease frustration, and to boost connection can only be good. So the sign that we teach to babies, baby sign, is really about teaching keywords. So hungry or poo or toys. We're not teaching them a whole language like South African Sign Language, but there are some children who really take to it. And then they're able to communicate more effectively before they're able to form words. Some kids don't love it, but really anything that can promote reducing frustration, improving connection can only be beneficial.
And this obviously takes time. Can you make up your own or do you have to follow?
You absolutely could make up your own.
Okay.
So there are loads of courses available, parenting courses and therapist courses. But the idea of that signing at that age is to ease communication between baby and the network surrounding her or him. So you could absolutely make up your own. The key is consistency. So every time you use the word, you use the same sign. And eventually, if it's the child's vibe, they'll go with you.
I love that. If it's your child's vibe, you were able to communicate before they can even shape words. Let's talk about face and mouth and even perhaps teeth development, right? How does a child's face development and teeth development affect their speech?
Excellent question. It's quite a complicated question. But what it comes down to is that the face, the mouth, the teeth are the structure or the machine that we use for these important functions, breathing, eating, and speaking. If your structure is not as well constructed as it should be, then your functions will become difficult to execute. It's quite helpful to think of it like a car. Speaking, eating, even breathing well are like driving in the Formula One. You've got to have good coordination, good speed, good control. But if your car has got poor wheel alignment or the oil's leaking out the engine, doesn't matter what Formula One school you go to, you're not going to be able to drive well in the Formula One. So if we can preserve good growth and development of those structures, we set kids up for good functioning in those areas. And the complicated piece, if we can encourage and develop good function, we can have positive effects on the structure.
We have had extraordinary chats on the show about teeth development, when to see your dentist. We even did one on mouth and nose breathing. So if you want to check that out, that's also on babybrunch.co.za. So speaking of breathing, I mean, breathing, eating, and speaking, is that also the visit to the speech therapist?
So it depends on what kind of speech therapist you're going to see.
Right.
One of the fields that I work in is a field called orofacial myofunctional therapy, which is the science of how the structure and the function speak to each other. Not all speech therapists are working in that field. If you're concerned about breathing, a dentist could be a good first place to go to, an ENT, but actually even just your GP or your family doctor. If your child is breathing through their mouth, that is not going to set them up for good development of their face, and we need to work out why and what we can do to correct it.
Surely this must be very uncomfortable for little one. All these big changes in their mouth and in their face, and it's affecting sleep and their digestion and posture.
Mm. So it's a very exciting part of my field, is that we're coming to understand much more that the face and the mouth are very much interconnected with the body and how the whole body functions. So if we have got large tonsils, we can't breathe well. then we can't sleep well, then we can't grow well, and we can't think well. So it really all is very much interconnected. And I mean, I'm a speech therapist, and I often speak to parents about digestion and bowel movements. Because if your mouth is open, you end up drying out the oral microbiome. So we talk a lot about the gut biome and macros and micros, but actually that starts in the mouth. And if you're breathing through your mouth and you're drying that out, you can have a cascading effect all the way down into bowel movements.
Tell me something. Speech and language, what's the difference?
Also a great question. Speech is how what we say sounds. So a child who, instead of saying cat, is saying tat, is presenting with a speech difficulty. And that can be appropriate up until a certain age. Language is a bit more complicated. It refers to how we understand and put words together in grammatical structures. So understanding of language comes first, and then from that we build use of language. And we have a social language piece. So what you and I are doing now, looking at each other in the eye, having a good distance from each other, you're echoing my body language. That is social language skills, which
you're
is
right,
also
I
a
am.
Piece.
You okay. When you said cat instead of tat, I was like, wait a minute, all four of my kids said tat. But then you did say up until a certain point, which brings me to this. Sometimes when we hear advice or even recommendation, there's a lot of panic. What should we be feeling when we notice something?
I think it's normal to have a certain amount of panic because we all, whether we know it or not, have a picture of our children being perfect because they're ours and they are perfect in themselves. It's about how you respond to that initial knee-jerk feeling. I think, to my mind, I am a bit type A, so I like to gather information. And I say to parents in my practice, if I refer them out for another profession or somebody's been referred to me, gathering more information can only be helpful to us. Rather, we know and we find a direction forwards than we are unknowing and not sure what support to provide.
How better can we support our friends and mommy circles with a diagnosis? I'm just thinking in general conversations, sometimes we don't want to disclose the therapy that we are attending or that we've seen a specialist in fear of being discriminated against.
It's a difficult question. I think the more we speak about it, the more normalized it becomes. I think there's a bit of a feeling in some groups in our society that therapists are over-treating or over-diagnosing. We really aren't. Therapists are, we're busy. We're not searching for work. We're driven by how can we help our clients, children or adults, optimize their development. There's really no therapist who's working with a child needlessly.
I like that. Mm. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
So what can we do at home? We are now ready to get our face development on. You know, we're brushing twice a day and everyone's eating well. We are pooing great. It's a floaty. Yeah, I just said that. Floaties are good, right?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
As someone who's a parenting advocate, I can tell you that floaties are good, okay? Because all four of my kids have shown me. quick story. So I just get Adam. I'm a stepmom and my baby's 5 years old. And he makes a poo and he calls me, Alana, come look. So I'm young. I'm like 32 and cool, you know. Why must I look at this? So he calls me and properly, it looked good. And I was like, hey, boy, you ate well. That's proper. And till today, I mean, now he's 21. When I tell him that story, he wants to die. But, you know, they ate really well as kids. So it brings me to this. I mean, what can we do at home?
It's a really good question. So in terms of good development of the face and mouth, we can do the best we can to help our kids have open nasal airways as much as possible. Now, with kids under 3, it's normal for them to have up to 12 colds a year.
Yeah.
So if you're a mom of a child under 3 and you feel like they always have a cold, it's because they do. But if we can be looking for support from whoever's supporting your family health-wise, your homeopath, your GP, helping to keep that nasal airway open, encourage nose breathing. If we can be chewing on good, solid food as early as possible.
A nice burger.
Not the best for chewing work. A carrot. Fantastic. So, you know, in our modern society, we've kind of tended towards highly processed, easy to chew, food that we don't even need to chew. You know, I think one of the shocks that I sometimes give parents is they say to me, you know, it's such a great breakfast. We have a smoothie every morning. Great from a you know, nutrition perspective, not so great from a chewing perspective. So this, you know, this kind of movement towards baby-led weaning, starting whole solids very early, whether or not that's the approach that you want to take for introducing your child to solids, it's still optimal if we can be getting them doing heavy chewing work as early as possible and for as long as possible.
Wow. It's interesting you say that, because one of mine, she opts for the smoothie. And even though they're older, you know,
yeah,
but then she hasn't had the lunch.
Yeah.
So once the liquid, instead of doing the work, you know, yes, and chewing. So it's even good for them in an older age?
Yes. So the chewing part helps your face to grow well, but it also sustains the growth of your face. So your bone needs constant loading from a mechanical perspective, from a chemical perspective, to sustain its shape. So if you think about anybody, you know, who's really on in years, you might find that their jaw has actually begun to shrink because they're not chewing as much because of the effects of age.
So my next question is pretty interesting. I have this thing that in life, and especially when I do interviews with people, because I speak with people often, if I ask them what their name is, I always want to hear it clearly. So the one requirement for me in the household for some reason was like my kids had to say their name so that people could understand or hear what their names are. In terms of strong speech, right, what can we do at home to encourage that? I must tell you, sometimes it's very tricky for me when someone says their name and I didn't hear it in the first place, and I know that I have really good
and
hearing.
And then you're stuck. Also a great question. So actually the single most powerful thing we can do to encourage good speech and language development is to read to our children.
You are the third person today that something's happening in the water.
So it must be true. That's if we could only do one thing, that is the thing. The other thing we can do in terms of structure is making sure that ears are working optimally. And then something that works an absolute bomb with kids, and I have to confess that I have to remind myself of this for my own children, is catching them doing right and praising them for it. If your priority is being able to have your children introduce themselves in a way that's easy to understand, and you observe them doing it well, and you pull them aside and say to them in a very specific way, Annabelle, you introduced yourself so clearly, and I'm so proud of you for speaking like that. That's going to have 10,000 times more power than criticizing a child for doing it poorly.
What about strong language development in an early age? Is it important? And I'm always curious because I meet these little people and then they use little, like big words, you know, they fall and then they speak with big words. Is that part of language development? Is it necessary?
It's not necessary. The more words we have, the better we are able to communicate, and later the better we are able to read. Mm-hmm. Apart from reading, the other thing that you could do to encourage that is to speak to your children relentlessly. Mm-hmm. So I say to parents in my practice, if you don't feel a little bit like a lunatic, you're not speaking enough. Right. So you could narrate what you're doing, speak out loud about what you're thinking, have conversation with your child in a quality way, but it's not actually about the words. It's about the love and connection that grows the communication.
Children have to see a dentist, and moms and dads have to see a dentist, and our pregnant ladies have to see a dentist. And it's one of the things that we've discussed here on Baby Brunch. But just quickly again, why do we need to see our dentist early on?
So we need to see our dentist early on, firstly, so that we're comfortable with the dentist. So the kind of prevailing knowledge is that it's great if your child can have a dental home by the time they're one. And that doesn't mean having a cleaning or even having the dentist looking in the child's mouth, but it means the child knows the dentist so that later on, if work needs to be done, it can, so that we can monitor and promote good health. If we end up with dental caries, the effects are actually massive. We can end up with pain and discomfort, firstly. We can end up with difficulty eating and then nutritional cascades down the way. We can end up with social effects by way of being embarrassed. A little girl in one of my kids' class who's got a black front tooth through no fault of hers, but it's an object of teasing. But there are other effects, like there's a connection between poor dental health and respiratory connections later on in life, respiratory conditions. There are some studies that are showing us a connection between motor development and language development and dental health. So that's really something that we'd like to be watching from the very beginning.
Introducing my children to the dentist for me was the solution to the dummy. And I remember the first visit and the second visit, we actually didn't do any work. It was just to say hi and sit in the chair. Mm-hmm. There was no work, and then we left. And it was very hard. We have done work on the show around pacifiers. Actually, there's a beautiful conversation around the right one to choose. So that's on babybrunch.co.za. But the thumb sucking and the dummy, we need it.
It's a difficult thing. And as a therapist, and in my academic persona, I want to say there's no dummy that's been clinically shown to be the best dummy. In fact, no dummy is the best dummy. But as a mom and a human, I've had my own children. Sometimes in order for the family to get through, you need a dummy to work as a pacifier. The important things to keep track of are, what is the frequency of the sucking? At what intensity, and what is the duration? If we can reduce those as much as possible to get through, fantastic. If we can get rid of that dummy before 6 months, we can reduce the risk of ear infections. Before 2, we reduce the risk of dental changes and then associated breathing, feeding, and speech changes. But there are some children who need that type of soothing for other reasons. And then we need other experts to help us satisfy that need in other ways before we take away the pacifier. But really after 2, we want to be reducing. And bottle feeding comes into that as well. And what we spoke about with kind of, you know, easy to eat, highly processed diets, we want to get off that bottle onto a cup or straw cup, really 18 months to 2 years.
Can we do damage long term if they don't start sucking on straws, or if we don't get off the bottle soon enough?
We can. Specifically around the tongue position in the mouth. So the tongue up in the mouth against the palate is what grows good facial development. If we've got that dummy in our mouth, or the bottle in our mouth more than is necessary, the tongue is down. And then we end up with a whole cascade of effects.
It's so wonderful that you're learning and teaching us, you know, how development and even the pacifier, the dummy, how we can do it and manage it in a healthy way. Can problems with how the face and the mouth develop, can it affect our hearing?
So inside our head, inside our skull, are 2 tubes, one from each ear, which help equalize pressure in the middle ear. And if that is disrupted for any reason, then we can end up on the train of recurrent ear infections or glue ear. Then we can end up with poor development of language understanding, poor balance, as we spoke about earlier, and poor speech sound production development. So if the face doesn't grow as it's meant to, the angle of those tubes doesn't come to where it should be, and then we end up in kind of a vicious death spiral of recurrent ear infections.
You go to the hospital.
You see, you end up in the hospital.
You end up in the hospital. That's why you have to brush your teeth. Without panic, what would be the early warning signs to look out for if my child had to need extra support with speech and language development?
Great question. We spoke about it earlier. First thing is mom's instinct. I can't tell you how many moms I've sat with and discussed, you know, the reason for coming for an assessment or the results of an assessment. And really what they've needed me to say is, you're not crazy. And there are things that we can do to help. In terms of more technical things, there are lots of different kind of milestone checklists that are available online. You obviously want to look for a reputable source, American Association of Pediatrics. CuraProx has a wonderful little booklet in terms of development. But from a speech language perspective, we want first words at about 1, 2 words together at about 18 months. If we are seeing huge levels of frustration around communication, that's often a sign, and it's not necessarily just the child's frustration, it can also be the family or the parent's frustration. If we're seeing a very passive child who's not engaging very actively in terms of communicating in any way, that is an area of concern. But really the first port of call is, are you feeling concerned? And if the answer is yes, please go and speak to somebody who can help you gather the information that you need, either to calm your anxiety or to help you use it in a way to drive your child's development.
You have such valuable advice, and all of a sudden it's taking me back to the babies being in toddler school, like in play school. Shaman, there was a little boy that would bite, and no one could establish why he's biting, and it's because he didn't talk. And only eventually, you know, we found out how to assist him to help the little boy. But up until the point that they helped, he was just the little bully.
And he's communicating, right? Yeah, he's not doing it the way we do it, but he's communicating.
He might have, you know, had a few. But I feel for him because this is valuable advice. We hear a lot about tongue ties. Tongue ties is something that we've covered, but this is so wonderful to have you here. And there's some of our moms and dads that are logging on only for the first time. Tell us about a tongue tie.
So everybody has a small piece of tissue that connects their tongue to the floor of their mouth. We call it a tongue tie when it starts to limit the movement and the function of the tongue. So the speech therapy fraternity used to believe that if you could get the tongue tip up behind the front teeth, It didn't matter if you had a tongue tie or not, your tongue was going to be able to serve you. We know now that the whole tongue needs to be up in the palate to drive good craniofacial development, and a tongue tie can have a negative effect on that, apart from on speech, also on breathing and on feeding and swallowing and on other full body things like posture. So that tongue tie is made up of a connective tissue called fascia, which covers all our muscles. And that particular piece of fascia is actually connected in a continuous line from the tongue to the tip of the big toe through the body. If you have a restriction there, it can actually cause your whole body to be pulled inwards like a string is tightening a bow. So tongue ties can have a massive effect on many different aspects. It's a bit of a tricky one because it comes and goes in a bit of a fad type of a wave. What you want from someone who's investigating a tongue tie is to look at the structure, because there's some signs, physical signs that we look for, but also to look at the function. How is it affecting the child's ability to execute those important functions? Because the structure itself is interesting. I call myself a mouth detective because I spend a lot of time poking around in people's mouths. But the structure on its own means nothing. It's about the function. Then if the function is affected, there are lots of different pathways for us to follow before we have to look at a snip, cutting it. And that actually should never be the first step, because we need to prepare the system, the body and the tongue, to be free of that constriction, if that's the way we're going to go.
I mean, I could keep you here for hours, and I've got ENT questions that I want to pose to you and everything, but just for our parents and for reassurance, ear infections and glue ear, is this something that you work with?
So I see a lot of kids who have had negative effects from ear infections and glue ear, and the tricky thing about ears is that there are children who can walk around with severe and extreme ear infections without giving any sort of indication. So really, you know, it's important that when we see the GP, for whatever reason, we have the GP look in our child's ears, but also that we are doing a hearing screening at least annually, so once a year from birth to 6. And actually, there's some schools of thought that are now recommending that we continue with those annual screenings till the age of 20, because our teenagers are abusing their hearing by use of headphones and
Don't get me started. I've banned headphones. Mm-hmm. Because I use them at work. Sorry, I just started talking about myself. I just actually brought my own problem. I would like to apologize to everyone listening to this podcast. Headphones, are they bad?
Again, frequency, intensity, and duration. So no, if we're using them for a specific reason, at a reasonable volume, not for hugely extended periods of time. So like anything else, you know, in moderation.
So we've only done this with one other expert. Are you up for a challenge?
Always.
Oh, I love it. But you're fun. You are so... I mean, when the cameras aren't rolling, you're even more fun. Okay. So here comes your challenge. All right. As a speech therapist, how much do you like the dentist?
Going myself, 0 out of 10.
As a speech therapist, how much do we need the dentist?
10 out of 10.
Ear infections and glue ear, who do we see first?
Your GP and then an ENT.
I did not expect you to say that.
You know what? The GP is a hugely powerful source of...
We love the GP.
...very broad, very grounded medical information. And we, you know, we... I think we in a lot of areas of, you know, kind of strata of this country are spoilt in that we have access to specialists. We don't need to start there. A good GP will know when enough is enough and we need somebody else to join the team.
Okay, speech therapy. Our children are not forming their words properly because their dads speak so badly and sluggish.
What's the question?
Oh, was it a rant or a question? Children mimic their parents.
6 out of 10.
Okay. Myofunctional therapy. Mm. What is it?
Myofunctional therapy, the science of how the structure and function of the head and face relate to each other and can influence each other.
Botox will affect your speech?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
I have never had Botox in my life. I speak beautifully. Are you up for another challenge?
Always.
Okay, say this. Unique New York, unique New York, unique New York.
Unique New York, unique New York, unique New York, unique New York.
You're the only other person that can do it. Okay, stump this. Sunny says so, I'll see if I can start sleep.
When, yeah.
You are fun. You are needed. We appreciate you. Just quickly, give us the details of your practice. Where can we find you?
So I work at a practice in Blegari called the Adnova Center for Child and Family Development. We don't have a website. We are reachable on landline. If you search us up on Google, you'll find us. And there's a whole host of professionals available to support families there.
Well, we do have a website, and we will put those details on babybrunch.co.za, together with that of Stephanie Thompson. Stephanie has been active in the field of speech therapy for more than 15 years, with her primary focus with children. She is so much fun. We think that your children are very blessed to have you, and so is your household. Thanks for bringing your shine and wonderful sense of humor and your knowledge to Parent and Baby Brunch. We really appreciate you. You can find more about Stephanie on babybrunch.co.za, and from all of us, we just want to say thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. A quick thanks to our support. This podcast is supported by Epimax, the dermatologist-recommended skincare range specifically formulated to hydrate, soothe, and protect. Whether it's dry skin, sensitive skin, or just everyday moisture, Epimax has a solution for everybody. Fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, and suitable for all ages. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.